This is Chris Bleck on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Bleck and Abdallah podcast. It's presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
It's Bleck and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Bleck and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
You can watch this show on Twitch. Search ESPN 1000 Chicago on Twitch. Watch the show. It's Bleck and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Lots going on tonight here in the sports world. And most importantly, when looking at the NFL, Roger Goodell comes out this afternoon with a statement on racism and police brutality. Here's Roger Goodell, commissioner of the NFL.
It has been a difficult time for our country, in particular, black people in our country. First, my condolences to the families of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and all the families who have endured police brutality. We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe Black Lives Matter. I personally protest with you and want to be part of the much-needed change in this country. Without black players, there would be no National Football League. And the protests around the country are emblematic of the centuries of silence, inequality, and oppression of black players, coaches, fans, and staff. We are listening. I am listening. And I will be reaching out to players who have raised their voices and others on how we can improve and go forward for a better and more united NFL family.
So that's Roger Goodell, commissioner of the NFL. And obviously it's important not only because of the weight and importance of the NFL to take a stance and to support the cause for supporting Black Lives Matter, but also because Roger Goodell in the NFL blackballed Colin Kaepernick in 2016, sent him out of the league, would not give him a realistic shot at getting a job in the NFL, and it seemed as if the issues were they completely ignored what the point of the kneeling during the anthem protest was all about. They just didn't want to disrupt possibly sponsors. And they tried to remove the issue, them thinking that Colin Kaepernick was an issue and that if they could remove him and Eric Reed and a few others, then this would all kind of go away. But NFL players have spoken up this week, rightfully so. And now the NFL is saying that they will support the cause and support protesting.
So some behind the scenes about this. Front office, Adam White from Front Office Sports. It had some behind the scenes about this. The NFL's own social media team went behind the league's back and created the video with the players, the one with Odell Beckham and Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins and Patrick Mahomes.
Before you continue on, here's the video Abdallah's talking about. Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Ezekiel Elliott, mm-hmm. Odell Beckham Jr., Michael Thomas, all these top-level players in the National Football League. Here's their video.
It's been 10 days since George Floyd was brutally murdered.
How many times do we need to ask you to listen to your players?
What will it take
for one of us to be murdered by police brutality?
What if I was George Floyd?
If I was George Floyd?
What if I was George Floyd?
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 I am George Floyd.
I am Breonna Taylor.
I am Ahmaud Arbery.
I am Eric Garner.
I am McCormick Dunn.
I am Tamir Rice.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Walter Scott.
I am Michael Brown Jr.
I am Samuel Du Bois.
I am Frank Smart.
I'm Philip White.
I am Jordan Baker.
We will not be silenced.
We assert our right
to peacefully protest.
It shouldn't take this long to admit.
So, on behalf of the National Football League,
this is what we,
the players
would like to hear you state.
We, the National Football League,
condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people.
We, the National Football League,
admit wrong and silencing our players from peacefully protesting.
We, the National Football League,
believe black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
So that was released before Roger Goodell made his statement.
That was released yesterday. The NFL's own social media, this is from Adam White from Front Office Sports. The NFL's own social media team went behind the league's back and created the video with players and then met with Goodell after doing it and got the league to come out with an apology for its previous inaction. So they made the video. The NFL's own social media team was like, we haven't done anything. We got to do something.
Right.
They went to all these players. They made the video, put it out, went to Goodell and said, you've got to respond. You have to. You haven't done anything yet. You have to respond. And so he did. And he ends the tweet by saying, if 2020 has taught us anything, it's expect the unexpected. Like, did you expect, after the players made this statement, did you expect Roger Goodell to come out and say what he said? Or I expected some, just like another written tweet. But they didn't think that was good enough. That's what this was response to. The social media team didn't think that that written statement was enough.
I agree with that.
I agree with it too. And I think that it shows a lot that someone within the company or a group of people within the company, within the NFL, said we got to do something about this on our own because the league's not doing it for us. And they went out and got all these players and then went to Goodell, the commissioner, the face of the owners. That's his job. His job is a representative of the owners, and got him to say what he said. Now, he doesn't say anything about what they're going to do in the future, how they're going to allow players to protest, what they're going to do with the national anthem, how they're going to handle playing the national anthem before games, whether or not they have players. Because remember before, a few years ago, it was stay in the locker room if you're going to protest, or just stay in the locker room altogether, and then people can come out, and then we'll have players come out. We're going to play the anthem, but if you are going to, if you guys are going to protest, and we're going to have a few of you, or you have the cheap photo op that Jerry Jones did where he had everybody kneel, he looked at the camera and gave a smile and then stood back up, and then they played the anthem because if you're a cowboy, you're not going to protest. That's what, those were his words.
Cheap photo ops. Never heard of that before. You know, here's the thing. When you lay out the timeline like that, I hope, because, okay, here, as you were talking, a couple of things popped into my mind. Is Roger Goodell the most powerful person in sports?
Well, he's in charge of the most powerful league in sports.
He's one of them, right?
Yeah, easily.
He works for the owners of the most powerful entity in all of sport, right?
Is there a player that's more powerful than Goodell?
No, I don't think so, because they're all employees of a bigger machine,
then yes,
right?
And the answer is there an owner that's more powerful than Goodell?
Think about anyone in sports. Is there anyone more who's a bigger deal than Roger Goodell?
Well, I feel like if it, as a face, no. But if you get down to it, he works for the owners, so technically the owners are more powerful. If the owners vote...
But it's the National Football League, and look at the roster of owners that you have.
I understand that. But if the owners vote and they say, look, we're going to vote on whether or not we want to allow players to protest, and they get, you know, there's 32 teams in the NFL. If it's, you know, 20 to 12 in favor of no protesting, then that's what they go with. You know what I mean? Like, that's Roger, and Roger Goodell has to go along with that because he is paid by the owners to be the commissioner of the NFL.
Yeah. What I'm getting at with that, though, of asking the question of, is he the most powerful person in sports? How is that going to go over within the halls of the NFL that some social media employees forced his hand into this conversation, into this apology? Now, by all accounts, he may be completely honest and truthful and apologetic, and these thoughts he was planning to release on his own, but you have the tweet right there from the NFL saying that this was not his idea. People underneath him went behind the NFL's back to create a video, to then get it out, to then force the most powerful person in sports to respond about something that they were wrong about.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going to go over in the halls of the NFL offices with the owners? How's that going to go over with the owners who didn't want to deal with this?
He says,
you know what I'm saying? Like, am I the only one thinking like, that's interesting. When you add in that element that the social media team of the NFL went behind the NFL's back to make this video with the players, rightfully so, and then they released it to force the hand of the commissioner to make a statement.
This is more from someone named Jordan Roderick. She's a reporter for the Rams for The Athletic. And this, she said, according to multiple league sources, this video of Goodell, who responds directly to players, came after a series of emotional meetings with league content creators dissatisfied with the original NFL statement and vocal player dissatisfaction. Creators ultimately collaborated directly with players, sans league involvement, to create the video that included all the players and pressured NFL to directly respond.
Good for them.
I love that.
I like the little guy standing up for what's right. That's great.
Look, because I
have a feeling that's not going to go over well.
Well, here's what I thought about this too, because one, it's,
that's the most powerful man in sports, and they are completely wrong in this entire situation.
He can't really do it. What are you going to do? Fire the people
and that's why it's brilliant on the part of those social media members, because they know what the hand that they're holding, right? They know that he can't retaliate off of this because it's what's right. They are fighting for what's right.
Well, look, and I would, a majority of the league is black, and not by a small majority. I would say, you know, Waddle said 70, I would say 75-80% of the league is black, right? If that's your only statement and you continue to be silent, and here's the thing though, the NFL has this luxury of time, and they have luxury of time with the coronavirus and response to that and how players are going to be dealing with that, because they can use baseball as a test case. They can use basketball and hockey as a test case, because their league doesn't start until September. These guys are talking about starting up in August, and baseball's talking about starting up the weekend of July 4th, right? They have time. They also have time to plan out how they are going to allow players to express themselves before, during, after games, right? And because of this, it's good now to start these conversations, so you're not just trying to throw something together the day before the league starts. Like, I hope that this statement by Roger Goodell, the stuff that's coming out now about how the social media team of the NFL was dissatisfied, they went to players on their own behind the team's backs and made this statement and played it and then showed it to Goodell, and Goodell was forced to respond. I hope that this leads to conversation that you can have, because we're 3 months away from the NFL supposedly starting, if everything goes according to their plan. They plan to start on time. And so you have 3 months to figure this out. You have 3 months to get it right. There are no excuses. None. Because you messed it up the first time, and you admitted that you messed it up the first time. And now you have 3 months until the first NFL game with a national anthem. You've got preseason games, but whatever, I'm not counting those. You have 98 days, specifically 98 days until the start of the NFL to figure this stuff out. And you better get it right. Because what I was getting to is, 70% of the league, if not more, is black. And if he doesn't respond that way, and 70% of your employees decide that they're not playing, what are you going to do then?
What's the percentage of owners?
Well, I think the players have a little more powers than the owners in this situation, because they can choose not to play. If I'm not playing, what are you going to do?
Well,
you're not going to pay me?
The players also have the people's backing on this.
Of course they do.
You know
do.
What I'm saying? Like, and that's why, like, the full circle conversation is, I wonder how guys like Jerry Jones feel about this. You know what I'm saying? I wonder those owners who have had their teams for a long time, you know, those old white guys that own the teams, I wonder how they feel about Goodell now admitting that they were wrong in the way they handled this. And you said one time, the first time, Colin Kaepernick's been out of the league since 2016. It's like they got the first 200 times mm-hmm. wrong on this. I want to ask you this question when we come back. betting next NFL season, if there's no one in the stands, how will that change the lines? We'll talk about it next.
Listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Gideon in Buffalo Grove. What's up, Gideon?
Hey, guys. What's up?
Gideon!
Hey, Gideon. It's been like 94 days. I feel like once the pandemic started, we didn't hear from you.
You don't call our show anymore. What's going on with that?
Your phone stopped working during the pandemic, Gideon?
I've been riding my motorcycle a lot. I can't really.
You don't got a hands-free device?
What did you say?
Do you have a hands-free device?
I do.
It's just loud. Motorcycles. Do you have a hog? You've got a hog, don't you? You've got like
I
a.
I do.
Yeah. With the handlebars way up high.
Yeah, yeah. You got a chopper. Gideon's in that chopper.
All right, Gideon. I love it.
I'm on a Sportster.
I don't know the difference.
Means he goes fast.
Oh, okay.
No, not really. Anyway, so what I was calling to say is, regardless of the bets you take, I just bet the opposite of what Sylvie says. Right. And then to answer your question in full, though, what I think is you have to think that the road team, or whoever is the road team, if they're playing in home stadiums, the road team is going to have a better chance of winning. The home team isn't going to have that home crowd behind them. I'm basing that off of college football in general and my experience with going to college football games at the University of Illinois and seeing Illinois against teams like in the game against Wisconsin, like the crowd was behind them. And I think that's part of why Wisconsin lost that game against Illinois this past year, because the crowd was behind Illinois.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that was a classic. You know, at that point in the season when Wisconsin lost that game, Gideon, they were in the top 10. They were heading towards a playoff spot if they kept things on the right path.
Yeah, they were ranked 6. It was an amazing win.
Thanks for the call, Gideon. We appreciate it, my friend.
Of course.
Keep that speedster. Is that what you called it, or a roadster? What'd you call it, a speedster?
Sportster.
Hands, oh, Sportster? He hung
hands
up on us.
Hands of 10. I don't know. Where are your hands on a motorcycle? They're not a 10 and 2.
Well, like, I think what he's talking about, he's like in. He's compact. He's not like on a hog with his hands up above his head.
I like picturing him on a hog. I like picturing him on a chopper.
He hung up on me.
That's fine. He's got places to go.
Let's go to him. Is he there?
He's got places to go. I mean, what do you want? He's got places to go.
He's not there.
You can't.
Not there.
It worked during the commercial.
I know. Not anymore. Okay, so I was going to ask you about this. I saw this yesterday in the Tampa Bay Times. What would empty stadiums, partial crowds mean to betting lines in the NFL and in college football?
I think it would. Okay, no.
Go ahead.
You were asking me a question.
Go ahead.
I think like Gideon said, it'll get home field advantage won't mean as much to teams.
Yeah.
Unless we're piping in crowd noise, but you're only piping it into the broadcast.
Yeah,
right?
I think the whole idea of piping in crowd noise is stupid.
You saw the stuff for the NBA that they want to do it. They want to use 2K sound. Now, it'd be cooler if they used NBA Jam sound, because then we could get, is it the shoes?
But it's still, any of that is stupid. Like what? After a bad shot, they're going to try and find the part in the NBA 2K where people start, bad shot. Like, come on. It's stupid. Just play. Just play the games. We'll be fine. Just play the games.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
It's not. So I wanted to ask you about, because obviously the Bears going on the road, a lot of these situations for the Chicago Bears, say everyone's playing in their home stadiums, there's just no fans in the stadiums, some of these opponents become a little bit easier to face off against because they don't have the crowd. They don't have the noise. It's not the same. Now, you can kind of go down the list of the Bears' schedule. Detroit, not a big deal. Atlanta, when they're good, that's a good crowd, right? That's a good spot. You continue on. Carolina, that's probably not going to be a problem. The Los Angeles Rams and their new stadium, SoFi Stadium.
Yeah.
I don't know what that atmosphere will be like. Tennessee, that's not a daunting task, right?
No.
Green Bay, yes. I think Green Bay will matter.
Look, I'd go through the numbers of the Bears as a road cover, but the Bears weren't a good cover to begin with last year, so.
No, I know, but when you look at it, if you don't think it's really going to make a whole big deal when you look at home and road, the road schedule actually kind of looks kind of easy for the Chicago Bears.
Well, yeah, but I think when it comes to betting, Vegas, now, when it comes to point spreads for the NFL, you know, if you don't gamble, you know the numbers of 3, 6.5, 2.5, you know, 3, 7, that kind of thing, right? I don't think that that's going to be affected because Vegas likes to get even action from both sides. So if a team's a 3-point favorite, I think a team's going to be a 3-point favorite. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think, oh, there's no crowd. Well, 2.5. You know, like, I don't think that that's going to be a factor because I think that they're looking from equal. Like, you can't tell me the Bears going into, you know, the Tampa Bay Bucks coming here with Tom Brady, they might be a 2.5-point favorite on the road, but because there's no crowd, they're actually a 3-point favorite. You know, like,
okay, so let's do this. I think this is a better way to look at it. Which stadiums actually make a difference? I would suggest that when Buffalo is good, Buffalo Stadium, their home crowd, that could make a difference when they're good, right? Like when Buffalo's not good, Buffalo Mafia is not. Listen, Bills Mafia, it's a great Twitter follow, but it doesn't do anything when the team stinks.
I still think they're pretty drunk and go through tables regardless.
Yeah, but it's different when they're good. When they're good, like, that's legit.
Well, when they're good, it's fun. When they're bad, it's just sad.
Baltimore, I think that's a spot, right?
Baltimore's a good crowd, yeah. Baltimore's got a great crowd, yeah.
Pittsburgh?
Yeah, great crowd, good crowd, good crowd. It's the NFL. Everybody sells out everywhere. It's the NFL.
No, but that's not what I'm talking about.
Except
I'm
for San Diego.
I'm talking about those daunting road games where when you go into that stadium, the team that shows up usually struggles.
My question
Denver,
is...
that's a spot. Denver's a spot where teams usually struggle. How much does that have to do with the altitude? How much does that have to do with the crowd?
Yeah.
Kansas City.
Yeah.
That crowd is always good. That's a good spot.
My question is going to be, as stadiums and states, as states more specifically, start to open up,
right,
and certain stadiums are allowed to have fans, does the NFL allow that to happen? And not fan, like Chicago,
to put fans in the stadium.
Yeah, like Chicago and Illinois is one of the more conservative states when it comes to corona response, right? Like Illinois, like Governor Pritzker, he's a Democratic governor. I get a liberal, but he's conservative when it comes to his views on opening the state back up, right?
Well, listen, that's based on science. He's going off of numbers
regardless,
to why he's doing that.
Regardless, I'm not getting into a science debate with you. I'm getting into states opening up debates.
You're the one that mentioned liberal.
I'm
just pointing to he's going off of numbers.
I'm giving you an argument of which states are opening up and which states aren't. Wisconsin is open.
Well,
let's say the Packers can do 50% capacity. Is it fair that the Packers can have fans and the Bears can't have fans? Will Roger Goodell make a decision and say, look, all fans or no fans? Like, either every team can have 50% capacity or no team can have 50% capacity.
I disagree with that take. I think if your state is better off...
I'm just asking the question.
No, I know, and I'm disagreeing with your take.
It's a question.
You're posing it as if you're suggesting that that's something that should take place.
I'm saying, what is he going to do? I'm not asking you whether it's right or wrong. I'm saying, what's going to happen?
I think it's kind of fun that if you're a team that's in the state of Florida, you could have a sold-out stadium.
Miami can have fans. Patriots, not so much.
If you're a Green Bay Packer fan, maybe it's sold out.
If you're in California, you're never going to a game again. Never. No games.
Jets, Giants...
Dallas, come on in.
We'll see you next year.
Come on in.
But the Cowboys, pack them in.
Come on in.
Two to a seat.
Double wide.
I mean, like, wouldn't that be something if, like, you turn on the red zone, and it's like, we now go to Dallas, and it's just this stadium, like, all right, and then let's pick a team. Say we go to... Yeah, now the Redskins are on the road against the Giants. We go to MetLife Stadium.
Blue 22! Blue 22!
Silence.
You could hear everything or you could hear nothing.
Missouri's open too because that's where the Ozarks are and everyone was partying 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So, okay, so Kansas City, full stadium.
Oh, that's a crowd.
Yeah,
Kansas
City. I know, yeah.
Extra loud.
And then we get the Chargers and the Las Vegas Raiders in L.A.
Blue 22.
It's the same play call.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, everybody's just using the same play call.
I think that would be kind of fun.
I think that teams want a competitive balance, and I think that owners will want a competitive balance. And again, you're going to have an owner's vote on what they should do. And so, I think that owners are going to want money, so they're going to vote for, if we can put fans in the stands, I want fans in the stands.
So what if Soldier Field could not have fans, but the Chicago Bears could go play at South Bend?
In South Bend? And then they
could have fans because it's Indiana.
Are you driving 3 hours, 3.5 hours to go see the Bears? You've got season tickets.
I'm good. It would be fun.
Look, Pat Bleck is on Twitch. He's in the chat. He's got the season tickets. Pat Bleck, let us know. Are we driving to South Bend to see the Bears?
Are we going
to
be safe? Are we good? If you can say yes, then yeah, let's go. But part of me kind of feels like...
I just want to know.
You can still watch the NFL on TV, right? Yeah.
Hey, guess who spoke again?
Who?
Drew Brees.
Did he really?
Mm-hmm.
About?
Well, yeah. Hit the next.
We're going to do an NBA backstory.
I'll read
up.
It real quick, and then we'll do the NBA backstory. It's the news!
Give me the news. What did he do now?
He posted on Instagram.
What now? Another Instagram post?
No video, just some words. I'll read them when we come back.
But why? I thought we were done with this. I thought we were done with addressing Drew Brees and his statements on social media.
Blue 22.
Why?
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Really?
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
Brees has made a statement, his third statement. His fourth statement, technically.
Know.
He had the Yahoo interview where he talked about...
Again?
He had the Yahoo interview where
he
said...
He's bounced around. He's had videos. He's had Instagram posts.
So this is an
Instagram
post
videos.
Now.
So he got a picture? The last post, he had a picture. Google searched black and white hand handshake, and he took the first image on Google Images. What does he have today?
So, on Instagram, about 10 minutes ago...
More? Really?
Drew Brees posted in response to President Trump...
Oh, no.
...talking about him and bringing up the flag and disrespecting the flag. And he says... The picture says, to President Trump, and then the caption is this. To @RealDonaldTrump, through my ongoing conversations with friends, teammates, and leaders in the black community, I realize this is not an issue about the American flag. It has never been. We can no longer use the flag to turn people away or distract them from the real issues that face our black communities. We did this back in 2017, and regretfully, I brought it back with my comments this week. We must stop talking about the flag and shift our attention to the real issues of systematic racial injustice, economic oppression, police brutality, and judicial and prison reform. We are at a critical juncture in our nation's history. If not now, then when? We as a white community need to listen and learn from the pain and suffering of our black communities. We must acknowledge the problems, identify the solutions, and then put this into action. The black community cannot do it alone. They will require all of us.
Okay. All right. That's pretty good.
Well, people will say...
That's a good response.
That he's pandering. And I think that this is exactly what people wanted him to do. And I can't...
From the start, right?
From the start. Use your platform. Drew Brees has this platform. He has... Let me look at it real quick. Drew Brees has 1.7 million followers on Instagram, and he's still got the picture of the handshake.
Yeah,
up there.
I know. It's still got the picture of the handshake. When you click on the profile, yeah, it's right the next to his handshake. His sad
he's got
face.
1.
He's got a sad 7 face mil- picture, yeah. And then he's got the handshake. Yeah, I see it.
He's got 1.7 million followers. He has a huge voice in the NFL. Martellus Bennett was all over Twitter. I watched him on CNN yesterday, last night with Don Lemon. He said it best. The white quarterback in the NFL has the biggest voice.
Yeah.
Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. Right? When you think of NFL quarterbacks, not the best, but the ones that can speak to the Americans that might be offended by the kneeling. Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. They need to use their platform to support their teammates that were being called names, that were being harassed, that were being put down by people that didn't understand the message of kneeling during the national anthem. Because you've got guys like Chris Long, right, who were standing next to their teammates. They put their hand on their shoulder when they were kneeling. That's great. But when I appreciate that you standing next to your brother in the league, right? Appreciate that. But the voice of the leaders of the team, who are Drew Brees, who are Aaron Rodgers, who are Tom Brady, even if it's, you know, it doesn't have to be just the white quarterbacks. It can be all the quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes has a huge voice in the league. Like if the main, when we talk about, when you see commercials on TV, it's Brees versus Mahomes. It's Tom Brady against Patrick Mahomes. It's Aaron Rodgers against whoever the Bears are putting up. You know, it's those voices.
And usually for those promos, they pick a defensive player, usually.
For the Bears.
That's kind of how it's worked
for the Bears, yeah.
For our lives.
Well, okay, fine. They pick a Aaron Rodgers against Matthew Stafford. Yeah, is that better for you?
Find a different team.
Yeah. A Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just being honest. That's how it kind of works.
Okay,
they do the marquee quarterback, and then they're like, star defensive player for the Chicago Bears.
Fine. But you know what I mean. That they are supposed to be, that's the point of this, is to use your platform to support those who aren't getting their message across on their platform. And that's what Drew Brees is doing.
And if you're following the timeline today, the reason Drew Brees is putting this out tonight is because Donald Trump talked about Drew Brees earlier today. Donald Trump, President of the United States, says Drew Brees should not have apologized. We should all stand for the national anthem. So this is Drew Brees responding tonight only because he was called out. Well, not necessarily called out. It's just the president was saying that he should not have apologized. So that's where Drew is then using his platform, like Adam is saying, and pushing back, right? Like the easy thing for Drew Brees to do is to kind of ignore.
Well, the easiest thing for Brees would be to do nothing.
Right. Ignore the president and just go about his business and say, you know, I don't get into the political side. I don't get into that conversation. But the president directly talked about him today, and Drew Brees called to action, responded.
Good.
So I think there should be credit there given to Drew Brees, because there has been a lot of negative conversation about him over the course of the last 48 hours. You know, the hand picture's terrible.
Take it down.
The whole point of the platform is now he can use it for good, right? Because now the president trying to muddy the message that Drew Brees is working hard to get out there after he apologized, he is now pushing back on that, trying to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where, you know, and that's why on Thursday morning, on Cap and Company, I had the stance that I didn't understand why the Chicago Bears canceled both quarterbacks for meeting the media. I understand that there could be concern that they would be worried that something would be said, because this is just happening the day after Drew Brees got into the hot water for what he said about kneeling for the flag and the anthem. But to me, you laid it out perfectly, Abdallah, and I said it on Cap and Company too. The message is strong when it comes from the, quote, leaders of the team, especially in the league. Those leaders who are promoted and on all of the promos for the upcoming games and getting all the sponsorship deals, those white quarterbacks. You have two white quarterbacks.
Well, hold on a second, though.
Well, but think about it this way. If they just came out and addressed it and supported their teammates, that would have impact.
Yeah,
that would have meaning.
But you also just said that they don't show the quarterbacks because the leaders on the team are on the defense.
Well,
they had Akeem Hicks and Danny Trevathan.
And they spoke.
Allen Robinson speak. Yes.
But my whole point on Thursday is that Trubisky and Foles were scheduled to talk. And then Drew Brees got in hot water and they canceled the events that day.
No, they canceled them the night before. I got the email the night before. So
okay,
to be
okay,
fair,
the night
I got
before,
the,
but Drew Brees was already in the hot water.
I honestly don't think it was because of Drew Brees.
Okay.
I think that here's
That's
why
fine.
I think it is.
And that can be the case. My point is that, fine, the Bears can say, it had nothing to do with Drew Brees. My point is it's impactful from someone like that,
mm-hmm.
the quarterback of the team, who is white, to speak out in support the black players he plays with and who he's teammates with, and to understand and empathize and be a part of the movement. That would have been impactful.
What I think happened is I think that Akeem Hicks, Danny Trevathan, Allen Robinson, and Matt Nagy all talked about their experiences. Think about it. Matt Nagy spoke for 25 minutes, 28 minutes.
And he was fantastic.
And three of them were about football, maybe less, about football. Same with Akeem Hicks. Same with Danny Trevathan. Same with Allen Robinson. And I think that when you look at content, right, like when you go to, you know, ChicagoTribune.com, when you go to Sun Times or The Athletic and you click on the Bears section, all that good content was there about the conversations that they were having with their teammates and everything like that. You bring Nick Foles and Trubisky.
And look, Jeff Dickerson said it on the air that Hub Arkish is like the pool reporter with contacting the Bears during this time because no one can actually go to House Hall. And Hub explained to all the reporters that this is more about a not trying to steal the limelight because all the questions are going to be about the quarterback competition. I just think that...
But what's going to change... But what's going to change between having Foles and Trubisky talk yesterday or have him talk next week? You're still going to talk about the battle. Matt Nagy said it himself. They asked him about it 2 weeks ago or whatever it was when they said, how's the quarterback competition going? He goes, what quarterback competition? None of us are around. We're all on Zoom. You can't have a quarterback competition on Zoom.
I'm not arguing the point that the football was not important. It wasn't. I just think that to your point about talking about Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, in this city, the most important player, I know that you can say, oh, there are star defensive players, but the quarterback of the team is pretty damn important.
I know, but I didn't
it's pretty need important.
To, I didn't need to hear from Trubisky and Foles. I didn't think it was a bad move for them to cancel it and just move it to next week or the week after whenever they decide to do it. I think it's bad that Foles and Trubisky have not talked since Foles was acquired. I think that's a problem, but ultimately in that setting, I think it was the right move for them to just say, we can do this next week. It's fine.
We're going to move to a NBA backstory coming up next. I think this one's going to be good. Derrick Rose, 2011.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
All right. Download our podcast on the ESPN Chicago app. Search Black and Abdallah. You can find all of our content right there, including our Bulls backstory shows that we did back during The Last Dance featuring the 90s Chicago Bulls. And then now our NBA backstories where we take a storyline, a highlight, and we kind of go in depth on that. And tonight's edition for NBA backstory, we take a look at Derrick Rose in 2011. He wins the MVP that season, Adam. It was one of those things where not only did the Bulls have the best record in the NBA, they were fantastic that year, 62-20. They finished number one in the East. Tom Thibodeau was the head coach. The Bulls, that roster, and what Derrick Rose did in that season really caught momentum throughout the year. And one game specifically that I always remember was that game right before the All-Star break When the Bulls beat the San Antonio Spurs 109-99, the Bulls went to 38-16 on the season. The rest of the league was done because they already released to the All-Star break, and this was that TNT primetime game right before the All-Star break started. Derrick Rose going against San Antonio Spurs. Rose against the Spurs puts up 42 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds in 38 minutes. He was spectacular. And really from that point on, because in that game, in the fourth quarter, the fans at the United Center were chanting MVP in that contest. So the Bulls had momentum. And at the moment, they had the best player in the league.
Absolutely. You look at that year, you know, what they accomplished that year, what Derek accomplished. It kind of solidified him as, obviously he was MVP that year, but it kind of solidified him as the next star in the city, right?
Yeah.
Like the Bulls were kind of missing that guy. They were missing that superstar, and it kind of solidified as, oh, well, yeah, Derek's an all-star and all that kind of stuff, but now Derek's the guy from the city, playing for the city. Like, he is going to be the next NBA superstar and set up this rivalry with LeBron for hopefully the next few years. And then, you know, obviously we know what happens to Derrick Rose moving forward, but ultimately that year he was obviously the most valuable player, but one of the best players in the NBA.
You know, what's funny is when I was thinking about what we should do for tonight, I wanted to do something that made me happy, and thinking about Derrick Rose in 2011 made me happy.
Mm-hmm.
He averaged 25 points, seven assists, four rebounds per game. He was just incredible, and it was not only his ability to get to the basket. He could hit a jump shot on a dime. He could stop, rise, and fire over you, and he made his teammates better. It was fun, and you know, like what I was thinking of is in 2011, all the possibilities were on the table, because obviously we can do backstories on the injuries and what took place after that. But in 2011, in the playoffs, when they lose to the Heat 4-1 in the Eastern Conference Finals, it was one of those kind of feelings like, okay, that's fine. We got you. We see what you're doing there, LeBron and the Miami Heat, but we'll be back. You know what I'm saying? Like, at no point during that season, and even though it stinks that they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals, did I feel like that was going to be the farthest they ever get. You know, like that they were never going to actually get to the NBA Finals. So, you know, if we go to the start of that playoff series, not that series specifically, the playoffs overall, this is game one. Like, think about this. Bulls and Pacers, game one of the NBA playoffs. Dan Shulman, John Barry, this is how they intro the game for that contest. Like, all the possibilities for the Chicago Bulls on the table.
Welcome to coverage of the NBA playoffs here on ESPN, and we begin the coverage in the great city of Chicago, where all kinds of people have all kinds of memories about six championships won in the 1990s. They're hoping maybe today is the first step towards another championship run for their beloved Bulls. The number one seed in the Eastern Conference, the team with the best record in the NBA during the regular season, the Bulls will begin the playoffs at home here in game one today against the Indiana Pacers. And of course, they're so excited about this team right now, and they're so excited about the young man, 22 years old, who just might win the MVP this year in Derrick Rose.
I think he will win the MVP to be the youngest ever to win that award, and I can make an argument that he might be the most improved player as well. It started at the FIBA World Championships in the summer. He knew he had to be more vocal. His game's improved in every area. I've never seen a point guard in the history of the league with the ability to finish like Derrick Rose. He can get to anywhere he wants to on the floor. He talked about the improvement, jump shooting. Nobody finishes better than Derrick Rose. And just a year ago, you talk about great point guards in the league. Was it Nash? Was it Williams? Was it Paul? Well, there's no question now. It's Derrick Rose, the only player in the NBA to rank in the top 10 in both scoring and assist. Derrick Rose, he's been sensational, and he's been the reason why the Chicago Bulls are the number one seed overall in the NBA.
Like, do you remember that time? Like, the Bulls heading into the playoffs, the number one team in the league. They've got this young, exciting player who may win the MVP. He turns into winning the MVP, the youngest MVP in league history. Heading into the season, the win total in Vegas was at 46.5 wins for the Chicago Bulls. They win 62 games that season. It was just incredible. So in our audio system, Abdallah, I went back to 2011. Here are three things that I found in our ESPN 1000 audio vault from 2011. The first one here, Derrick Rose was on Waddle and Sylvie, and Sylvie asked Derrick Rose about what if you could be MVP this season. Like, the answer from Derrick, it's such a Derrick answer because he's so shy about it. It's awesome.
So where were you going to put the 2010-2011 MVP award in
Don't
place?
Say that.
No, seriously, where are you going to put it? I mean, that's an important thing, interior decorating.
If I do get it, I think my mom will get it.
I mean, like, isn't that great?
Goes to cut off Waddle. Don't say that.
Yeah, don't say that. Like, isn't that great? I also found this at the time we had the Chicago Bulls on our airwaves. Our call letters for the FCC is WMVP,
yeah.
AM Chicago. Mm-hmm. So we ran these in 2011. The station ID.
Hey, this is D Rose, and you're listening to the home of the Bulls, ESPN 1000. WMVP Chicago.
Awesome. If you're an OG to the station, you've definitely heard that before. Oh, yeah. And then also President Obama. You remember this?
Give it up for Derrick Rose. MVP. 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 MVP.
So Derrick Rose wins the MVP in 2011.
This goes back to all the way, you go back. I'm looking at it right now. It was September 29, 2010, when he said, why can't he win MVP? Why can't I be MVP of the league? Yeah. And it came to fruition that year.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. That's our NBA backstory for tonight. Thank you to Sean Davis for producing the show tonight. We'll be back on Sunday, 8 to 10 a.m.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.